Welcome to the Leadership Now podcast with Dr. Aaron Rock, hosted on Beachhead Media and other podcasting platforms. Aaron Rock has served as a pastor, a chaplain, a professor, a writer, and a speaker, and he has a keen interest in helping other Christians to think Christianly about all of life. So on this show, we talk about the nuts and bolts of theology, church life, cultural issues, apologetics, ethics, and other relevant matters that will help you to lead better now. I'm your host, Chris Eelman, and today's title is going to be What I Would Do If I Were Prime Minister. Now, this is not speaking about me because we're going to hear from Dr. Rock, but it is important to critically analyze our government's decisions, and there's quite a lot, unfortunately, to criticize in our current government. But if you had the opportunity to affect change, what kind of decisions would you make? On today's show, Dr. Rock is going to ask the question, what he would do if he were prime minister, and we hope that this episode is going to serve to stimulate your thought regarding what kind of country we'd all benefit from living in. So Aaron, why don't you get us started?
Right on. I hope that our listeners have caught on by now that one of the hallmarks of our show is that we want to provide practical solutions. So we want to deal with theological issues. We want to ground our comments in a robust Christian worldview. We want to demonstrate that we know a thing or two about the Bible, but we really want to drill down into the practical application, the policies that change families, that change churches, that change nations, that bring honor and glory to God. So this will be practical in that regard. It's easy to pontificate on theoretical issues. It's easy to have an opinion on what people are doing properly or improperly. But I want to be a guy that thinks through the issues to the point of possible solutions. Mm-hmm. By the way, this isn't a veiled announcement that I'm running for public office.
Come on. I'd vote for you.
Yeah. But my purpose in titling it that is I want people to think about, like, what would you do if you were prime minister? What would be your priorities if you are in a different governmental system? What would you do if you were president? Mm-hmm. What would you do if locally you were the mayor of your municipality? Mm-hmm. What would you do if you were the president of your nation? So this is why I thought it would be a fun thing to do. Now, right out of the gates, what I want our listeners to understand is that I want to deal with some broad policies and decisions that I think should be made in our country to better our nation. What I don't want people emailing me or messaging me about is, hey, did you know that's actually a municipal issue, or do you know that's a provincial issue? So I'm not getting so technical here that I've spent a whole bunch of time separating out federal, provincial, municipal, or federal, state level, local jurisdictional matters. I'm speaking in terms of ideals. So just assume for a moment that you were the head leader of your nation and you could affect change on any level. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to worry about red tape or bureaucracy or policy standing in the way. So even when I get into my comments about finances, please don't misunderstand. Mm-hmm. I'm not limiting these comments specifically to federal issues. I'm just saying, what are some major changes that need to take place in our nation, notwithstanding the fact that they may actually fall under municipal jurisdiction or provincial jurisdiction or federal jurisdiction. But I hope that this podcast will serve to stimulate people's thinking about what needs to change and what mm-hmm. some of the solutions are in order for that to happen.
Mm-hmm. So start out with one of the most important. What kind of policies would you make regarding life and death?
Mm-hmm. Well, I would print lots of money that is unsubstantiated by any sort of gold or substantive backing. I would bring in so many immigrants that people in our nation couldn't even find houses, and then they'd be forced to build government houses and forced to live in government buildings. I would fund trans surgeries. I would ensure that everything that anyone said that was opposed to my views were labeled hate speech. If I was ever accused of corruption, I would investigate myself and quickly declare myself to be not guilty.
There's so many good sound bites to be taken from this episode.
I'm sorry. I'm reading off Justin Trudeau's notes. Oops. I apologize. Yeah, that's a good question. So on a macro level, I think one of the prime responsibilities of people in political office is to guard the sanctity of human life. Mm-hmm. So the very first thing I would do, I would ban abortion in all forms. I would make it absolutely illegal to abort children. Now, if you want to get into the weeds on this and someone were to say, well, what about 6 months along and the mother's life's on the line? Well, folks, that happens all the time. It's called full-term babies that have to be taken out by a C-section and one or both people die. Mm-hmm. So you would obviously utilize the same medical wisdom. If one or both person's life is on the line, you have to act, and the possibility of one or both dying are real, are realities. Mm-hmm. And that's unfortunate, but that's life in a broken world. But what you don't do is you don't say, well, we're just going to assume that the mother's life is a real human life and the baby's life isn't a real human life, so we're going to always err on the side of saving the mother's life and executing the child. No, you try to save both lives, obviously. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And you exercise the best medical care that you have to do that. So in those rare instances where a child has to be removed from the womb and may die as a result, or the mother may die as a result, to save one or both lives, we get it. But that's not a very common thing. I would ban abortion right out of the gates on my first day in office. If I had the power to do that, I would ban abortion. Mm-hmm. I would make assisted suicide illegal. I would make the execution of depressed people at the hands of the state, the execution of old people at the hands of the state illegal. I wouldn't force people on, to have be hooked up to machines to extend their life beyond what is natural and normal ad infinitum. But I would not allow for people to be executed at the hands of the state. Mm-hmm. I would make trans surgeries illegal. That would be illegal. You would not be able to participate in that. You can't get your parts cut off and rearranged and make yourself into some Frankensteinian individual. I would also reinstate capital punishment for murderers, for pedophiles, for rapists. This is Romans 13 in action. This is the wielding of the sword in action. Mm-hmm. Sadly, so many people, even in the Christian community, bristle at the concept of capital punishment. Oh, that sounds archaic. That sounds medieval. No, it's actually pre-Old Covenant. Mm-hmm. You can reference Genesis 9:6. We've dealt with this in other episodes. Yep. Let me give you an example of how horrifying our judicial system is. One of my daughters was born in the year 2000. So this is a little bit emotional for me. There was another little girl born in our country in 2000. Her name was Tori Stafford. At the age of 8, she was abducted by a young man. I think he was around 28. His girlfriend was about 19. She was abducted by these two creeps. She was beaten up. She was raped. And she was ultimately murdered with a claw hammer. And then her body was disposed in a rural area in our province, in Ontario. Eventually, they caught the perpetrators. They both went to jail. Canada Proud, which is a Twitter site, commented on this week. If you research it a little bit further, there's a lot of accuracy to it. So this little 8-year-old, after being abducted, raped, murdered, her murderers, Michael Rafferty and Terry Lynn McClintock, mm-hmm. are now in our quote-unquote correction systems with tennis courts and ice rinks. Terry Lynn, the murderess, was for a period of time sent to a healing lodge mm-hmm. in Saskatchewan under the claims that she's Indigenous. Because after all, you obviously, doesn't it make sense to punish Indigenous people differently? No. Mm. There's not even firm evidence she is Indigenous. But she was sent to a healing lodge with no fence around it, just with TV monitors. Fortunately, there was some public pushback and she was put back into the penal system. But the point is these are people that are living now costing the taxpayer whatever, $100,000 a year to be incarcerated. They're not contributing to mm-hmm. to culture, that will be out of jail probably if they serve their maximum sentences in 25 years. So they'll still be, young people. So if she goes in at 19, 20, she could be out at 45 years of age. Meanwhile, she took a claw hammer and smashed the head in on a little girl after raping her. Like what mm-hmm. kind of a nut job world are we in mm-hmm. where people don't understand talionic justice. eye for eye, tooth for tooth. You execute a child, you're put to death.
Yep.
That's the just penalty for the crime. Mm-hmm. And it is a deterrent. But even if it isn't a deterrent to everyone, it's the just thing to do. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine if your little girl was abducted by a couple of creeps, raped, beaten to death with a claw hammer, and you know that these couple horrifying people are now costing taxpayers millions of dollars and are enjoying all the benefits of the modern corrections. It should be a penal system, but it's really not. It's a correction system because apparently it's the job of the state to correct everyone instead of penalize them. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just absolutely repulsive, and we could give other stories of this. So we need to reinstate – I would reinstate capital mm-hmm. punishment. I would make medical coercion illegal. Nobody should be forced to get a jab, a procedure against their will. I'd accomplish this largely by unhitching the state from medicine because what we saw during the pandemic was not trust the scientists. It was trust the political scientists. It was a blending of politics yes. with science. And we know this because if you were a physician that had enough integrity to say, actually, I have some concerns about this vaccine, or I have some concerns about these medical tactics, well, we're going to take your license away. You know, you need to toe the line. And many medical practitioners were either silenced, lost their jobs, or penalized because they didn't toe the party line. Well, who was behind that? The medical associations that are in bed with the politicians that were pontificating on medical matters as if they were somehow our family physician. We have to separate. There has to be a separation of powers if you're going to have a properly functioning system. When you meld your medical system with political considerations, where those overseeing your medical system are being paid by politicians, in a sense, through tax dollars, when there's an undue, they're not at arm's length from one another, I guess is how you could put it, you have corruption in medicine. So now you have coercion. So I do believe it's in the best interest of a properly ordered society for a state to have basic laws and regulations that would regulate healthcare providers. But that's it. All healthcare should be provided by competitive, client-centered providers. And if they don't treat you well and they make you wait in the lobby for 10 hours, you go to the next clinic. Mm-hmm. You go to the next hospital. You would buy health coverage. This sounds so strange to many Canadians. It's more normal in America. You would buy health coverage just like you'd buy car insurance. The state doesn't pay for your car insurance. The state doesn't pay for your life insurance. It'll probably get to a point where it wants to. Mm-hmm. Well, you're actually paying for it, but they want to take the money out of your pocket. So why do we think it's so weird that we would pay for our own health coverage? And then you could also have a public purse, or better yet, if you reduce taxation, you allow health charities mm-hmm. to be formed within a nation to provide for the basic health care of the have-nots, mm-hmm. the people in positions of poverty. But what we're seeing in our nation is this blending of state and health care, and it's an absolute mess. And the government's response, well, let's throw more money on it. No, the system, the concept is broken, and it just simply doesn't work. The final thing I would do, and there's many more things we could talk about, but these are some of the ones that came to my head first, is I would build a robust military capable of actually defending our nation. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean we have to have a military so large that we have to send tens of thousands of troops to other country to deal with every skirmish that's going on out there. But if we're going to have a territory, and I believe we're the second largest land owning country on earth, we should be able to defend our territory. Mm-hmm. And by the way, the people that would be part of that military would actually know, be familiar enough with reality mm-hmm. to be able to tell you whether they are actually a man or a woman,
yes.
right? And we wouldn't have things like tampons in the bathrooms for male soldiers. I mean, talk about an absolutely nonsensical place to put them. Historically, countries have been defended primarily by red-blooded men. And regardless of their skin color, mm-hmm. Red-blooded men. And is there a place for women in the military? I suppose, in technician roles and whatnot. We could talk administrative functions, on and on and on. But primarily, your military would be staffed by red-blooded men who actually knew they were men. Mm-hmm. Pretty basic concept.
Yep. So that's
so
that's
radical, by the way.
Yes.
So radical. Basically, everything I'm saying are things we used to do.
Yes.
So it's not particularly radical. These are extreme views. These are normal views.
Yes.
That people have historically held to.
Yeah, normal and historic views, right? So when it comes to things like our national debt and economics, what kind of policies would you make there?
Okay, well, this is where we need a major overhaul in our country and in many other Western nations. We have successfully created a generation, several generations, that just think debt is normal. Mm-hmm. And when you talk to people about political issues and you say, hey, we have a national debt, their eyes just glaze over. It's like, what is that? Who cares? National debt, it's some esoteric thing out there. It doesn't affect my life. Well, it does affect your life. And it's important for people to have some, you don't need to be an expert, but have some basic understanding of economics. You can't keep buying and providing services for your citizens that you don't have the money for. And you can't keep putting your nation into debt so that a large part of our taxation systems are going to fund debt. The politicians are giving themselves copious, endless raises, mm-hmm. While the cost of living is going through the roof, and the cost of or the paychecks are not going up commensurate to the cost of living. You know, one of my own children is living up in Cambridge and is looking for a house. And pretty much the if you could even get one, okay, pretty much the starter houses are going to go for $650,000. How do you afford that, right? And how do you afford that when there's a bit of a scramble for those houses, when you're importing, whatever it is, a million immigrants a year who are going to spill into communities like that, and investors are going to buy those houses to rent them out to immigrants, or immigrants, if they come with money, are going to buy those houses. Mm-hmm. And people that live in this country, it becomes increasingly impossible for them to purchase houses. I have a suspicion, by the way, this is all tied to the 2030 agenda, mm-hmm. because if you create a situation where young people literally cannot even purchase houses, well, then what do? The state steps in and says, we'll rescue you. We'll build state-owned houses. And you can live in our little condos or our apartment complexes. I mean, it's almost like a reinvention of what we saw in Soviet-era Romania and other places like that. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I would eliminate the national debt. And I'll tell you how I would eliminate the national debt. There's several aspects to this. First of all, we have massive land holdings in Canada. I don't know if our listeners know this, but roughly 89% of Canada is owned by the Crown. So that doesn't mean that King Charles III literally owns it, but as a representative governor of the Crown, he owns it, and it's the job of the government to manage it. So it's not like one person owns it, but in simplistic terms, 11% is owned by private citizens, and 89% of Canada, to the tune, I believe, could be a little off on this, to the tune of around 2 trillion acres are owned by the Crown. We should be paying next to nothing for land in Canada. Mm-hmm. Now, how do you eliminate a debt that is also around 2 trillion? Well, you sell land. You make land available to private owners. We need to start selling off Crown land to private citizens. If you're going bankrupt and you own 100 acres and you have the opportunity to sell off 10 acres, you sell off 10 acres to pay off your debt. Mm-hmm. We could just as easily pay off our debt as a nation if we started selling off, I believe, Crown land to private citizens. Now, I know there's a whole process. I believe municipalities have to actually petition the government, and they can take Crown land and then develop it. There's infrastructures that need to be put in, all that kind of stuff. So practically speaking, there's a lot of red tape that you need to go through. But imagine if you started blowing roads through the forests up into northern communities from all provinces. Just picture roads going north. Mm-hmm. You run power lines up. You sell land to private citizens. People will develop those lands. You get electricity up there. Mm-hmm. They're going to put septic systems in. They're going to drill wells. They're going to start building businesses. Why are we not doing that? We're all huddled close to the southern border. and the land prices are going up and up and up. But if you look up north in our country, we have trillions of acres of land available that is essentially being unused. The government would also do well to pay off the debt by leasing out land, like lease out land to miners, lease out land to foresters. You can come up with basic policies. You know, if you go in and you take out 1,000 acres of pine trees, you got to plant little $2 ones to replace them, and you pay us a fee. Tariffs. Before income tax came in, best as I understand, the Canadian government largely funded itself based upon natural resources and tariffs on imported products. Mm-hmm. So there's ways that people can, even if my number is a little bit off, I mean, even if you sold those 2 trillion acres off for a buck a piece, you'd pay off the debt, right? Now you'd get way, way, way more than that. But if there's all this red tape that people have to go through to even access Crown land or buy Crown land, people just throw up their hands. Most people aren't going to do the work to do that. Mm-hmm. We would need to massively reduce taxes. I would massively reduce tax. So on principle, there would be no income tax. Income tax, I think, is unethical. That's your stream of income. That's what you work for. Mm. I think people should pay taxes, but we should pay federal taxes or provincial taxes in the same way that we pay municipal taxes. Yep. You get a bill, mm-hmm. right? You get a bill. Your property is assessed. You get a bill by your municipality, and it says you owe us $5,000 or $3,000 or $10,000 or whatever your tax rate is per year. On principle, you should be billed for your taxes, but not taken off your income tax, because then you like never see it. Mm-hmm. And there just seems to be something innately unethical about the government stepping in and having an agreement with your employer that forces them to take money off of your paycheck and give it directly to them. That's a control tactic that's inappropriate. The government could generate income again by allowing private industries. They need to get out of the business industry. They need to get out of healthcare. They need to get out of plowing roads. They need to get out of building roads. They could oversee all that. Those should all be done by private corporations that have contracts with the government and have basic regulations in place. But the government can generate income because on behalf of the Crown, they could lease out, rent out, sell off portions of Crown land and pay off the national debt and then stop going into national debt after that. Here's a radical thought. Pay as you go. Mm-hmm. There's a radical thought. Pay as you go. Stop accumulating debt. So it's interesting that I received a flyer in my mailbox from our local provincial member of parliament. We call them MPPs here in Ontario. And he is part of the Progressive Conservative Party, they call it here in Ontario. And I opened this big flyer up, and it's this long list of all this money they've given away. That was the main thing that he wanted us to see.
Yep.
This is a conservative, and this long list of, you know, thousands, tens of thousands here, you know, a million here, tens of thousands here, 100,000 here, all this tax money that we're supposed to pat him on the back for, because him and his party decided to give, I think it was $32,000 or $132,000 or something like that to the local anti-hate group in Amherstburg for security reasons. Are you kidding me? That's not a conservative way of running a country. Yeah. You're taking tax dollars and you're just giving them away to these people so that you look good. And that's not what government is for. Like government, people need to get this through their head. It's so weird that people have this idea that the job of the government is to take your money and redistribute it to people who ask for it. Mm-hmm. That's communism. Mm-hmm. That's not how taxation should work. Though, if you take taxes from your citizens, you take those taxes to provide public justice, basic public services. You don't take tax dollars from people so that you can pay for rainbow flags mm-hmm. on municipal signs. You don't take off money off people's paychecks so you can give it to the local quote-unquote anti-hate network. And you know they're not anti-hate at all. They hate all things Christian mm-hmm. and all things historically Western. That's not the job of the government. But whether it's liberals or conservatives or pretty much anybody in between, that's what they think. That's what people want. And the citizens need to be educated on these issues. And you need to hit the reset button in your head and understand that it is not the job of the government to give you money. Mm-hmm. It's not the job of the government to give you money. It's not the job of the government to do brain surgery on you. It's not the job of the government to do that. It's not the job of the government to educate your kids. It's not the job of the government to make your life work. That's not the job of the government. Mm-hmm. The job of the government is to oversee public justice. And obviously that in implies on the level of detail that there needs to be some regulation. You know, you don't want people hanging out a sign saying I'm a brain surgeon and doing brain surgery on people and killing people when they have no medical training. There needs to be some basic regulations in place for that sort of thing. But we could massively reduce income tax by the government generating income off the trillions of acres of land that we have. A lot of countries don't have this blessing, but we have more natural resources than we could possibly use in our lifetimes. And we need to tap into those. Mm-hmm. Once debt is corrected, now this would require a massive ideological shift. We need to return to the gold standard or something like that so that our money actually is backed by something substantive and historically valuable and stop borrowing money. How would social services then be addressed? So I would put almost every government employee out of a job. Hmm. But if you're listing and you're a government employee, that doesn't mean you'd be unemployed. Mm-hmm. You would be very gainfully employed because the job that you do for the government would be done for private industries. You may even be an owner or an entrepreneur in those private mm-hmm. industries. So it's not like healthcare workers would be put out of a job. It's just you wouldn't work for the behemoth called the government. You'd work for, you know, ABC Health Corporation or mm-hmm. XYZ Health Corporation. You wouldn't have a government that's out buying snowplows. You would hire that out. It's interesting, like even on the new highway that leads up to our church, best as I can tell, the vehicles that are maintaining it, that's a private organization. That's how it should be. Yeah. Why are municipal governments buying snowplows and building buildings to pile up salt and sand for the winter months? You hire that stuff out. You allow for competitive bids. Policing, firefighting, doesn't need to be government. Historically, before we were born, there'd be different fire brigades that would be called to a scene to deal with an issue. I think even in the 1950s, all ambulance services were privatized. It's so weird that we think, oh, all of this stuff, the really important stuff has to be run by the government because like they're the only ones that can do it, right? They're the ones that pay good wages. Well, of course they pay you good wages and then they take half your wages in the form of taxes. Mm-hmm. And you are constantly then in the crosshairs of the citizens. Take, for instance, every year the province of Ontario publishes what they call the Sunshine List, right? Which is all the municipal employees that make over 100 grand a year, which isn't even an extravagant income anymore. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, I'd be like, oh, that's like a millionaire. It's not even an extravagant income anymore. But people making over $100,000, all their names are published in the newspaper or online or whatever, so you can look at what everyone makes. Well, does that feel good to you to feel like you're always in the crosshairs of the taxpayers? Wouldn't it be better for you to work for a private corporation and what they pay you is between you and them mm-hmm. and they have contracts with the government to plow roads or whatever basic services are needed? No one would lose their job. You just work for private competitive industries. I dare say your life would probably be better mm-hmm. in the long run. The state could oversee basic public infrastructure, like making sure there are roads, there's basic public sanitation, there's government buildings. Obviously, we'd have to have a revenue department, basic emergency social welfare, courts, standardized policies to ensure justice in a newly massively expanded private sector. But this stuff needs to be downloaded. Anything the government does in terms of a program becomes politicized. So it becomes a voting tool. So it's not really for you, it's for them. Mm-hmm. It's like, do you like what we're giving you? Will you vote for us again? It's not really about quality of outcomes. It's about what impresses you the most about us. We're going to give you more than the next party, so vote for us. This is the government mindset. It becomes very expensive and the service just doesn't add up. As soon as you walk into a government-funded anything, you can just sense that you're just a number. There's no customer service. And they don't really care how long you wait. But when you walk into a private industry, if I walk into a hardware store and the guy comes right to me, hey, can I help you with something, sir? They know that if they don't have good customer service, I'm just going to go to the hardware store down the street. If you don't, if you start a coffee shop and you can't offer a reasonably priced, decently brewed cup of coffee, no one's going to come to your store. Mm-hmm. But the government could serve you Folgers that was swept up off the floor, that fell off, you know, the skids in the warehouse, that has rat poop in it and hair in it. Sweep it up, grind it up, serve you coffee. If that's all you have, well, it's like whatever, take it or leave it, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what we kind of get in healthcare. The problem with the healthcare system is not the healthcare practitioners. We have lots of great physicians and nurses. We're not belittling you in any way, shape, or form. Yeah. The problem is you're working for a broken system. Mm-hmm. And most people know that. So I say all that to answer this question. People say, well, I can't even imagine what would a society be like if we don't have healthcare? What about for the have-nots? Mm-hmm. What about for people that can't afford it? Have you ever heard of something called a charity? If you let people keep the vast majority of their paycheck, mm-hmm. keep in mind that even under old covenant law, God exacted a 10% tithe. God, as the ultimate authority over all of life, exacted a 10% tithe. Mm-hmm. Now we live in a government system where they think they can exact 50, 60% of your income. They're playing the role of God and you're supposed to thank them for it. Mm-hmm. But what you do is if you reduce taxation down to just enough to provide for basic services, and you allow people to deduct the full amount that they give to charity. So if you have $1,000 and you give it away to charity, you shouldn't be paying any tax on that, zero. Mm-hmm. That should be entirely tax deductible. And then you can have private health charities. People would start them. Just like we have other forms of charities that help people that the government doesn't yet have services for, mm-hmm. whether it's food banks. The government doesn't have a food distribution program. So food banks start. Right, you would have health charities start. You'd have charities for people that are in need. In other words, the culture would actually have to have a heart again. Mm-hmm. Charity, i.e., yeah. comes from the word love.
More than a dollar at the till.
Yeah, yeah, but we have destroyed charitable causes for the most part in our country because the government wants to provide all of that, mm-hmm. and they're terrible at it. Right.
Yeah.
And then. And I could go on and on, but one other thing that comes to mind, if you commit a crime, a bona fide crime, not one of these ridiculous trumped up fake crimes like hate speech, but if you commit a bona fide crime and you are incarcerated, you work to help pay for your incarceration. That sounds terrible. Can you imagine being a prisoner and actually having to do work? Oh, how abusive. Mm-hmm. No, you would work to help pay for the costs. You're probably not even going to be able to cover it all, but you're going to in some way pay for your incarceration costs by helping to participate in projects that contribute to the public good. Mm-hmm. So if you're going to go steal and rob and cheat and murder and whatever else, well, first of all, if you murder people, you'd be in a casket because I believe in capital mm-hmm. punishment. It's not that I believe in it. The Bible teaches
that's
it.
That's right.
Yep. Genesis 9:6. Not my opinion. Read your Bible. Genesis 9:6. By the way, if you don't believe in capital punishment, then let me ask you this a question. Why is it that God ultimately capitally executes everyone that transgresses his law? Mm-hmm. You do believe in something called hell, right? Mm-hmm. So why is it so hard for people to understand that hell will be populated, that God will ultimately execute, put to death, mm-hmm. cause to die, all who sin against him and are not redeemed by the precious blood of the eternal lamb. But in the civil realm, it's like, oh, that sounds so unchristian. What if you're robbing them of the opportunity to make a last minute profession of faith? Well, there's going to be a period of time when you're walking to the gallows that you can make that profession mm-hmm. of faith. Mm-hmm. The last person you should talk to should be probably a minister. But that's beside the point. If you're a prisoner, it's not a free ride. Mm-hmm. You're cutting grass or baling hay or building fences or digging ditches or something like that. And that would be also a little bit of a deterrent to those who are habitual reoffenders who just love to spend the majority of their time in jail, costing everyone else money who's actually working for a living. Mm-hmm. What does the Bible say? If a man doesn't work, shouldn't eat. If a man doesn't work, he shouldn't eat. Well, if you're eating on the public purse, on behalf mm-hmm. of the public purse, you're going to have to work for that. So those are some basic economic things that would have to, if I could, I would enact those day one.
Day one. That's excellent.
In fact, everything I would do day one.
Day one. Let's get you. You may just run yet. You never know. The response to the podcast might be. Anyways, what policies would you make in the area of public morality? This is a one, well, it's maybe not tricky, but it can be difficult.
Well, you know what? All these bills that are just flat out nonsense and contrary to God's laws, those would go through the paper shredder really quick if I had the authority to do that. So Bill C-4, gonzo. The nonsense surrounding the conversion bill, gonzo. All the stuff about hate speech and online censorship, gonzo. Mm-hmm. Obviously, the MAID bill, gonzo. Any of these bills that are woke in nature, antichrist in nature, that are toting the rise of the totalitarian state, gonzo, all through the paper shredder. Good riddance. In terms of public morality, I am not opposed to immigration. I think we have a moral responsibility to care for the proverbial alien and stranger who is destitute. If there are refugees from countries where people's lives are being on the line, you know, we should have systems in place to bring refugees in, immigrants in that regard. If there's people that are of like mind who they don't have to be born again, blood-bought believers, but if there's people that value the Christian roots of our nation and they're not here to bring Sharia law into place or to promulgate cultural Marxism or to champion communism or these other godless ideologies, you know, they're going to contribute to this nation. We're a nation largely of immigrants. We would obviously welcome people from those backgrounds, but you'd have to still limit it. I mean, there has to be some common sense policies in place. I mean, you cannot, for instance, you can't say, oh, we're going to build 650,000 houses this year and we're going to bring in a million immigrants. Now, I know not every immigrant has their own house, their family units, but you can't build houses just to keep up with immigrants. Mm-hmm. You have to be able to provide opportunities for people that already live here. There's 40 million people in this country to provide housing. So it would be limited. And I would not permit people to come into our country who are opposed to the historic current, I wouldn't even say current because I don't want to go down that road, but the historic values that built Western nations. I just wouldn't do it.
Yep.
You're not going to invite someone into your home to babysit your kid who hates kids. Why would you do that? Mm-hmm. You're not going to hire a dog sitter or dog walker that abuses dogs. Why are we inviting people into our nation that hate Western civilization? Mm-hmm. I mean, have you seen some of the protests by Muslims, even in the streets of Montreal, calling for the death of the Jews? Mm-hmm. Like, are you kidding me? You know, our grandfathers went to war to deal with the Hitler problem 70 years ago because he was murdering Jews. And now we're inviting people from a different part of the world into our country that want to kill Jews, that are literally shouting in the streets of Montreal, death to the Jews. Mm-hmm. By the way, I doubt many imams are listening to my podcast, but one thing, as much as I sometimes get a little bit upset with how much time Christians spend nitpicking, you know, other Christians. Well, I'm more reformed than you. Well, I'm more reformed than you. And one thing that Christians are good at is they're not afraid to criticize their own. Mm-hmm. Like if someone preaches a heretical sermon, if someone says something out of place, if someone runs off on their wife, they get called out. Mm-hmm. And I think that is sometimes it's not necessarily done in the right way, but I think that's something that has marked Christianity, which is a positive. We're not afraid to criticize, especially in the Protestant wing of Christianity. We're not afraid to criticize our own. Well, Muslims love to talk about, you know, they're a religion of peace or a religion of peace or a religion of peace. Well, if you're a religion of peace and you're seeing your Muslim brothers on the streets of Montreal chanting death to the Jews, mm-hmm. why are you not immediately going public chastising that? Mm-hmm. Christians would do that. If we saw Christians doing that, we'd be all over that. Muslims don't do it, right? So they want everybody to think they're a religion of peace, but they don't hold each other accountable. And it obviously raises the most obvious question is, well, is it because you actually agree with what they're mm-hmm. saying? And I suspect that they do. Mm. And if you don't, why are you not holding your own to account for the peaceable religion that you supposedly affirm? I'm not saying that to rile up Muslims or to, you know, pick unnecessary fights. I've had a lot of opportunities to evangelize Muslims over the years, but it's like the same with when we did the million, was it the million?
Million March for Children.
You know, we're down at the riverfront speaking publicly against people cutting parts off kids. And there's Christians and secularists and Muslims all speaking on the podium. And then a little while later, a lot of the folks that were part of the Million Man March, or what did we call it again?
Million March for Children.
Million March for Kids, that were part of that are marching in the streets, you know, down with Israel and all this sort of stuff, right? So you can't have that. You can't keep importing people that hate Western values and expect to have a sustainable nation. Mm-hmm. You can have all your idyllic dreams of multiculturalism and pluralism and, oh, we're all just going to hop and skip through the park and all get along with our different color shirts on and our different backgrounds and our different religions. Newsflash, it doesn't work, mm-hmm. right? Unless there's some basic agreement on values and identity, it doesn't work. You know, it doesn't work in marriage for people that have two completely different ideologies. Mm-hmm. It wouldn't work in if you're starting a business. Yep. You don't have a capitalist start a business with a communist. Like it just, let's be partners. You know, you're the capitalist, I'm the communist, but we'll just work it all out. Mm-hmm. Doesn't work, right? And in the same way, you cannot sustain a nation long term that's composed of all these little mini nations. I mean, I even heard recently, I think it was maybe in Toronto, a group of Ukrainians that were demanding that the leader of the Conservative Party send more money to the Ukrainian war, lest he lose their votes. I'm thinking, okay, so you're going to come to Canada and you're going to threaten to vote or not vote for a Canadian member of parliament who's supposed to be in office to represent the citizens of Canada because he's not helping and representing the people in your homeland. Like, I understand the emotional temptation to do that, but Canadian MPs don't work for Ukrainians. Yeah. Regardless of what you think about the Ukrainian war, Canadian MPs don't work for Ukrainians. They work for Canadians. Yeah. And so if you're in elected office, your first responsibility is to be a nationalist, to be someone that stands for your nation, not a globalist who thinks that they're somehow in office to represent the global agenda. Mm-hmm. You may not like the word nationalist, but I mean, your first priority is your nation, nationalist, right? Mm-hmm. Public morality, maybe this doesn't quite fall into public morality. Some of these might need to be reorganized under different headings, but we have a problem with energy in our country. I would champion research in all forms of energy, nuclear energy, drilling for oil, electric vehicles, wind power, hydrogen pipelines. Nobody should have the government's official endorsement on their form of energy. Mm-hmm. Let companies and researchers find as many different kinds of energy, whether it's wind, oil, whatever, create products, create a competitive market that markets their product with its commensurate energy source, and let the citizens decide over time what is the most economical, what's the cleanest. People research their purchases. Mm-hmm. You know, you'd be hard pressed for people to buy anything on Amazon without reading the reviews, without buying a vehicle without going online and cross-referencing it to all these sites that compare and contrast the pluses and minuses of every vehicle. The government doesn't need to be saying we all need to drive EVs. If mm-hmm. EVs are the way forward, citizens will demand that over time because there'll be quality vehicles, that function well in our climate and are cost effective. But if they're not those three things and another form of energy becomes that, people will develop that. You know, those things will develop over time. So I'd let businesses research and sell their products based upon, drum roll, their own merits, rather than some bureaucrat that says, if you're going to be a good Canadian, you have to drive an EV. You have to drive an EV. No, that's ridiculous.
Well, and then if it's not marketable, the government, and we sort of see this, do this, they do all kinds of grants and stuff, right? So they take your taxpayer dollars again. And
constantly manipulating.
Right.
See, they taxation is, in its most fundamental form, supposed to be to help fund the community, the nation, the province, with regard to its basic public infrastructure and oversight. It's not, but it's become so manipulative. It's become so stinking manipulative where you are forced. You would be more likely to go to jail for calling for a tax revolt than you would be for killing some 8-year-old. I mean, the reality is, like, the government, it's so interested in money and power, right? Which is one of the marks of tyrants. It's so interested in money and power, and they can literally just vote in any tax they want, and there's nothing you can do about it. And democracy, and most for them, while it's probably still the best system we have, it's full of holes, right? Democracy. So on election day, you get to go and vote for someone who then is in bed with a party, who then just is going to do whatever they want till the next election day. This is why a lot of people don't even bother going to the polls, because they just feel hopeless. What's the point? What am I going to do? I'm going to go to the poll and vote for a guy or a girl or someone that doesn't know if they're a boy or a girl, a Zay, a Zer, or a Key, or whatever. And they're going to go and supposedly just do whatever their party wants them to do. So it sounds democratic. They don't really care what you think after the fact. You can write your letters. They'll do whatever they want for the most part. Okay, I would champion free speech. I think that's a moral issue. Now, I wouldn't champion absolute free speech. I believe that our speech is still constrained by God's laws. So public blasphemy, outlawed. God is the basis of law. If you're going around cursing God's name in public, there's consequences to that, because that's essentially high treason. You are denouncing the very authority upon which human civilization is built. Calling for the death of people, obviously, you know, the death of innocents, to be more accurate. These things would be banned. If you're in a cubicle beside someone at work and you're screaming into their ear for an hour on end, you don't say, well, free speech, you can do what you want. I mean, free speech isn't totally free. But what you're not going to do is you're not going to be doing what the government's doing in you know, censoring people to their agenda. I would not police, believe it or not, people's private sexual lives. I would not do that. I wouldn't be sending out police with flashlights to look in your bedroom at night to see who you're having sex with. I wouldn't be doing that. But I would actually ban the public incitation to sexual sin. So it would be illegal to publicly promote adultery. It would be illegal to publicly promote homosexuality. It would be illegal to publicly promote non-marital heterosexuality. It would be illegal to promote pedophilia, bestiality. Now, some of these things would also be chargeable under criminal law, like if you were obviously pedophile or bestiality, those things should be chargeable offenses. But like, well, that sounds kind of weird. No, that's the way we used to do it. The Canadian police never went around looking in people's windows at night to see what they were doing. But what you need to understand, this is how we need to be thinking, is that you cannot permit people to be going into schools and inciting sexual sin. You can't permit that. This is what's happening in our nation. You can't permit people to go into schools and tell little children, you know, it's okay for adults to have sex with you. It's okay for, and you say, well, that's not happening. Well, yeah, it kind of is. When you put a little pair of panties on a middle-aged dude and dress him up in a little toga or a little tutu, I should say, and send them in to dance provocatively in front of five-year-olds, you're sexualizing them.
Yep.
You're normalizing that. That should be illegal.
Yep.
You should go to jail for that. So there's a difference between private sin, mm-hmm. okay, which I don't believe it's not the job of the state to police people's private sexual lives behind closed doors. Mm-hmm. It is the job of the state to say, no, there's certain things you cannot incite people to do in public because it destroys social order,
yeah.
right? But we are so far removed from that. This is like shocking for people. Like, this guy is like a far-right extremist fringe Looney Tune, whatever other. No, this is actually normal. Mm-hmm. This is the kind of thing that normal countries do. They say they don't police, you know, if a couple's having an affair, they don't kick the door in and arrest you. It's the job of the church to, you know, preach morality and call people to repent. It's not the job of the state to police that kind of morality. But if you're then advertising your affair on social media or telling people, hey, you should have one too, this actually destroys life. This destroys public order. And so the key word is incite. Just like there's a lot of talk about inciting hatred. Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. It should be illegal to incite hatred. Well, if you mean hatred by God's laws, I actually kind of agree with that. Mm-hmm. Like, you shouldn't be able to say, hey, let's kill Jewish people.
Right.
Right? But that's not how it's being used. It's interesting that the true incitation to hatred, let death to the Jews, death to the Jews. The police just stand on the sidelines.
Yep.
But if you say, hand up, do you mind me? You're in university class. I actually don't think that women should be having sex with women. Bigot, hate speech. Do you know how many people are killing themselves because of your language? You're a horrible person. Who do you think you are? Put this guy in jail, lock him up. Let's pass laws. He's a danger to civilization. It's like, you're a lunatic. Mm-hmm. You're literally calling good evil and evil good. So we should not be able to incite people. It's the same with theft. You shouldn't be able to say, hey, I think it's great to steal, everyone. Hey, why don't you rob your neighbor's house there when they're at work? Why don't you steal your neighbor's car? You'd say, okay, even though you're not doing it, you're inciting people to doing it. That's a problem. That's an offense. You're not allowed to do that. So we cannot permit in a properly ordered society people to incite other people to sin. Although it is not the job of the state to go and police everyone's individual behavior. Mm-hmm. So to say it this way, we would not police the behavior of someone in their bedroom between two consenting adults. That's the job of the church to preach against that, but we wouldn't force people to be, you know, heterosexual and monogamous in marriage. But if they step out of their house into the public realm, public schools, political office, and they're telling people, no, you should do this too.
Yeah.
This is the kind of thing you should do. Your life's going to be better. No, that's not allowed. You don't do that.
Would that extend as well as far as like media and whatnot? Like,
of course,
any
public platform where you're inciting people to commit sin mm-hmm. that destroys life and destroys the fabric of civilization, that's illegal. Okay, that's illegal. I would ban all DEI initiatives, all Marxism in schools, and I would require educators to teach their subjects objectively. Only national flags should be flown on flagpoles. I live near a town called Harrow, which is in the municipality of Essex. Maybe I haven't noticed this. Maybe it just happened this week. Maybe it's been there for a couple months. But I noticed two signs this week coming into Harrow. Mm-hmm. It says, we're an inclusive community. It doesn't have the flag of Essex on it. It doesn't have the flag of Ontario on it. It doesn't have the flag of Canada. It has the trans flag on it. Like, are you kidding me? If you live in that municipality, you need to start like a petition now. Mm-hmm. Like, that's an offense to people of faith, or at least it should be. And it's an ideology. So really, so inclusive to you, we're going to boil it all down to your sexual preferences. Like, that's what we're going to add. You're going to be an Ontario municipality. And what you're going to put on your flag, if anything, any message you could put on your sign, mm-hmm. you could have, it's a great place to live. We have the cheapest housing. We have the best farmland. We have the best schools. No, we like sodomy. We like people chopping parts off. Like, everyone's on board with this. This is our definition of inclusivity. Like, out of all the issues, that's your issue. Those signs need to be removed and replaced with a national flag, a provincial flag, or a municipal flag. Mm-hmm. tomorrow,
yep.
right? And people need to speak out against that. So those would be some things that in terms of public morality that I think would have to happen. And there would be many, many more things that need to happen. But those are just some basic introductory, in no order of importance, kinds of things that would have to be
done. That's a good platform there. I wonder if any conservative or any politicians will listen in on this podcast and pick up some.
They'd be like, maybe not. Don't let this guy in our party.
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Do you think you would get elected?
No.
Come on. Ye of little faith.
I wouldn't. We can't even get Christians to agree that voting people into office who did not speak out against lockdowns is a bad idea. Hmm. We can't even get people to vote people into office who are fully on board with the whole pride transgender initiative. Here's the reality, Chris. We live in a very, very broken nation. Mm-hmm. And, you know, while we got nice trees, nice rivers, nice mountains, nice people, places to visit, in the Canadian landscape, by comparison to what we see out there, I am about as radical as it gets. Now, I don't think I'm radical. I think I'm very normal. Mm-hmm. And I think my views are grounded in history and in scripture and in common sense. But we just tend to live at a point in time where people are willing to vote for someone that's just a little bit better than what we currently have. Mm-hmm. And that's the same. I mean, I look at the United States too, right? And I think to myself, okay, you got Trump who's going to be on the ballot, and you got Biden that is on the ballot. And one thing I do appreciate about Trump is that through his efforts, Roe v. Wade was overturned. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yep. And there's maybe some other things I appreciate about him. But I feel sorry for Americans. Those are your two options? Like, are you kidding me? You have hundreds of millions of people in your country, and you got a senile old man who can hardly put one word together with another, who wants to kill babies in the womb. Mm-hmm. And then you have a guy who was, for political reasons largely, willing to stand up against Roe v. Wade, which he needs a gold star for, but is a certifiable narcissist. Yeah. This is what you get in the United States of America. These are your only two options, really? Now, people that play the political game don't want to say that because we're like, we don't want to say anything negative about mm-hmm. Trump because we certainly don't want Biden to get in. I understand your political, the little political game that you're playing. I understand that. It's like in our country, well, if you got option A, B, C, or D, well, option A is ruined our nation, so let's go for option B. I understand that people are they just want a little bit of a break, but – mark my words, you can be offended by it. You can argue in another direction. I am 100% convinced that our nation will continue to head toward the cliff and over the cliff unless there is rapid reform. And if the people of God aren't even comfortable with the things I've talked about, mm-hmm. or they're comfortable with them, but if you go down the list, it's like, well, you know, we could probably find a party that agrees with a quarter of the discussions about, you know, economics. But the rest of it, that's a little extreme. Right? Mm-hmm. It's a little bit extreme. No, there's no way I would be elected. There's no way. But, and it's not an aspiration of mine, but I'll say this. For those of you that aspire to political office, if you go in because you're an incrementalist and you think, you know, I'm going to go in, I'm going to kind of keep my head down, I'm going to try to build my platform. And over time, I'm going to make changes. Okay, God bless you. I commend you for your courage. I commend you for your efforts. But I've seen it before. If at the end of your term, you have not seen substantive changes, you were duped, you were played the fool, or you were compromised. I've seen it time and time again. I'm going to go in and I'm going to change this and I'm going to change that. But once you're in the system, like, it's incredibly partisan. Mm-hmm. Your votes are whipped. time and time again. You kind of have to vote party line. Literally, you vote party line, and the party is largely controlled by big donors and whatever. Mm-hmm. Money is a huge thing. So most parties are going to be in or out based upon how well they run the economy or how much they destroy the economy. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't prepared to stick their neck out mm-hmm. and put a petition together because a local municipality has the flag on the sign. It's just not worth the headache. Mm-hmm. Most people aren't going to waste time walking in front of the hospital protesting abortion. They got other things to do, right? Mm-hmm. They got a vacation to plan. Mm-hmm. So because we have such a compromised church, the chances of someone being voted into office, and then, of course, you need a large portion of the vote to get in, that's even half as conservative as I am. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's going to be a multi-generational prospect unless Jesus Christ comes back soon. Yeah. But having said all of that, I do believe in revivals,
yep.
right? I believe in them. Mm-hmm. And I believe that we are called to do the right thing and to say the right thing regardless of the outcomes. I am not a pragmatist in the sense that I don't need to say or believe something and get a result in order to maintain my beliefs.
Yep.
Right? I'm not a pragmatist. I'm not eschatologically, I'm not a pragmatist. I see the rise of pragmatism in the Christian church today, where it's like, well, we're going to fight for cultural change because we believe we're going to get it. Well, okay, I'm glad you're optimistic prior to the second coming of Christ. I'm not. Mm-hmm. I am a historical premillennialist. I'm not a postmillennialist. I have many, many postmillennial friends. I love them. I think it's a valid eschatological system. I don't buy into it exegetically. It's not a hobby horse for mine. And a lot of people think I'm a postmillennialist because they're like, well, he must be because he fights for cultural change. Yeah, exactly. No, I do it because it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
And I do it because in my lifetime, I believe that God can bring about revivals. Yeah. And I have a track record, especially during the pandemic, of proving that I will resist tyranny. Mm-hmm. And I will seek to effect change in the culture that I live in because yeah. it's the right thing to do. It's yeah. the principled thing to do.
Yeah.
And every Christian, regardless of their eschatological persuasion, should don that mindset. Mm-hmm. It's the right thing to do. Are you prepared to do the right thing regardless of the outcome, right? Now, could I be wrong on my eschatological system? Of course. But I'm going to do the right thing mm-hmm. regardless. I'm going yep. to continue to study the scripture. Could I be swayed one way or the other? Of course.
Yep.
Am I going to be tribal about it? No. Is it going to become my hobby horse? Nope. But I'm going to do the right thing mm-hmm. regardless of the outcome. And all Christians of all persuasions have, if you've studied history, we have seen the highs and lows. We saw it through Israel, good kings and bad kings.
Yep.
Demise and revival. Mm-hmm. We've seen that in the West. We've seen that in African countries. We've seen that in South American countries. God brings revival. Mm-hmm. And because he is king and he owns every square inch of the planet, every once in a while, at key points in history, he steps forward and he kind of reminds people in an extra special way who's the boss. Mm-hmm. And he forces people to their knees and he forces people to repent and he brings about mass conversions. And that can happen again because we don't have a timeline in mind. Mm-hmm. We don't know when Jesus is going to make all things new.
Yeah.
But we do the right thing regardless. And you know, I'll just say this to people too. You can spend all your time checking all your eschatological boxes and crossing your T's and debating and arguing and speaking and writing on it. But at the end of the day, when push comes to shove, are you affecting change? Mm-hmm. Are you affecting change? So are you building institutions? Are you actually taking a stand in public? Or are you just fine-tuning to a greater degree? Let me just fine-tune my theology just a little bit more. Let's just dial it in a little bit more. Okay, that's good to do. I'm a theologian. Frankly, I have more education than most people listening to this podcast. But what I don't do is I don't spend all my time dialing in the nuances of my theology. I want to be theologically sound, and I think we all should be. Mm-hmm. But I also want to affect change. Mm-hmm. And so in listening to this podcast, and I say, well, I don't think I'm going to be elected. I'm certain I won't. But those that are running for office, we are in a broken system. Those that are social influencers, religious leaders, entrepreneurs, when you start to talk about this stuff, over time, you normalize it again. Mm-hmm. So you talk about it. You talk about it around the dinner table. You talk about it in your churches. You talk about it in private conversations. If you're in office, you bring it up. Hey, have you guys thought about this? You normalize it. See, what you can do is you can normalize lies. You can normalize the truth.
Yep.
Some of the things that are normal for people to believe in our society today were very abnormal in my youth. No one would ever have been even having a conversation about chopping parts off kids. Mm-hmm. But our opponents talk about it so much and so incessantly that it becomes normal. Most people are lemmings. They just follow the narrative, right? Mm-hmm. And so because that's part of human nature, we can learn from that. Let's just keep speaking the truth. And over time, if enough people do that, you can affect change as well. So it becomes normal again, believe it or not, for people to say, you know what, I think there are two genders. Mm-hmm. Or I don't think that it's the job of the state to control public education. Or I don't think it's the job of the state to control the church. Oh, this becomes normal again. Mm-hmm. And again, with the exception of the application maybe being different, I think every single policy that I've presented that I would enact as prime minister are grounded in history. Surprise, surprise. They're nothing new. They're not even particularly original to me. So anyway, that's my long answer to your short question.
Will you get elected? So,
but I'd vote for you, Chris.
You'd vote for me.
Yeah.
Well, I think there's a much higher calling than political office for me. I don't know. Or maybe, well, I don't know. Anyways, I don't want
to be.
I don't want to diminish it. I don't want to diminish
it. So I'll just say this. Years ago, I had a friend say, he was an American. I would never step down from the pulpit to become the president of the United States, right? Because he saw his, and I think we do need to be careful not to make, public preaching ministry the supreme vocation. Like all vocations we enter into, whether you are in custodial services, medical science, the role of the clergy, administrator, whatever it is, it's all as unto the Lord. That's but right. I get your point. I believe God has called me to shepherd this church, mm-hmm. not to lead a denomination, not to lead a seminary, not to be an itinerant evangelist. I believe God has called me, best as I can tell for life, we'll see how it works out. Mm-hmm. Maybe people get tired of me, to pastor this local assembly for life to the best of my ability. Mm-hmm. And that's my mindset at least.
Yeah.
So if the Lord has other plans in store for me, that would be a real surprise. But hopefully at least stimulates others to think through these issues.
Yep, for sure. So, well, thanks for answering that question. It's kind of an interesting one to think about. Unfortunately, many Christians don't think Christianly about politics or life in leadership. And so it's good to kind of lay it out. Because let's say we go vote for Christians into office that don't think like Christians.
Yeah.
Well, we're stuck, right? Yeah. And that's a polite way of putting it. Yeah. But well, thanks for tuning in. Hopefully by now you've heard about Beachhead Media, our new app that's on all mobile platforms. It's a great resource, has this podcast as well as other ones. It's a really useful, interactive device that you can download your episodes, listen on the go, not use up all kinds of data and that kind of thing. We hope you can also spread the word, share the news about Beachhead Media and Leadership Now on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, all those places, X, I suppose. And hopefully that'll be a blessing to many others. And then we hope you'll tune in next week to another episode of Leadership Now with Dr. Aaron Rock.